everybody. I'm Hemel Jhaveri alongside Brian Minter. Welcome to 10 Movies, the podcast where we dig into the work of one actor through 10 of their movies. We used to be called Culture Time Podcast, but we changed our name to 10 Movies. This season, we are going to be looking at the films of Mr. All Right, All Right, All Right himself, Matthew McConaughey.
We're back, baby!
We're coming off a very successful season 2.
Very successful. We would have been hard-pressed to have turned in a more successful season of high-quality, handcrafted audio content.
Where we talked about Keanu Reeves. So we're sticking with what we know and what we like, and we're taking a look at the films of Matthew McConaughey. Before we get into the film that we are going to be talking about today, which is A Time to Kill, why did we choose Matthew McConaughey? Let's answer that first.
You said we should do Matthew McConaughey, and I said, that's great! Let's do that!
I'll be honest, there was not a lot of thought into it.
Well, there was a lot of thought.
There was.
You know what? Let's part the curtain here. As we sit here in Hemel's lavishly appointed podcasting studio, we're going to take you behind the curtain to see how the podcasting magic is made. We thought a great deal about a number of really overly intellectualized concepts for this new season. And we even recorded some, and we're like, wow, these are super boring.
They were not good.
And a friend of the podcast, Meredith, said, why don't you just do another actor, the Keanu thing? That made sense. We're like, yes. And Hemel said, oh, Matthew McConaughey.
But I think that McConaughey is a really good fit because, as I don't want to speak for Brian, I will let him speak for himself. But for me, he embodies like a very singular place in popular culture. Definitely not as high as Keanu Reeves, but he has a large body of work to pick from. He's been around for a long time, and he's really grown and developed as an actor too.
Yeah, I think he's probably a stronger actor, certainly, than Keanu Reeves. And I think he also occupies a similar, like, place of warmth in America's cultural heart, right?
Yeah.
Like, we're not sick of him. He's not everywhere like your Matt Damon or your Tom Cruise. But everyone has a Matthew McConaughey movie or character that they love.
I agree. And I think this is hard to articulate, but McConaughey has a vibe. He's like a very...
Yes.
Singular
vibe.
What
is the McConaughey vibe? That should be the question we interrogate this season on the podcast.
I agree. I think that's a good way to get into it. So before we do dive into A Time to Kill, I do want to give people a little bit of a trigger warning. Honestly, this movie has a really heavy subject matter. It deals with the rape of a 10-year-old girl. So if that's a subject matter that you just don't want to deal with, please stop listening right now. We would appreciate it if you came back for episode 2. But if that's a topic that... is going to make you uncomfortable, please dip out right now.
Although if you are bothered by terrible films, you will not want to return for episode 2, The Wedding Planner.
No, come back for The Wedding Planner.
Trigger warning of a different sort.
It's so good.
So A Time to Kill, 1996's A Time to Kill, probably the star-making role, I would say, for Matthew McConaughey. Hemel, what happens in the film?
This is my most hated question. I will give a very succinct plot summary that Brian will then tear to shreds.
It better be good.
It is about a small-town lawyer in Mississippi who takes the case of a black man who has taken justice into his own hands.
Murdered some dudes.
And murdered the two men who have brutally raped his 10-year-old daughter. And it is about the fallout that happens in this town. But that's the basic plot of the film, right? It's McConaughey as a small-town lawyer wrestling with defending this murderer who is a black man. And it's two white men that have raped his black 10-year-old daughter. And the racial tensions in this town.
I think that's actually pretty good. I think you got it.
Oh, my God.
Well, I would say the main plot element of the movie is people sweating.
Oh, my God.
You didn't mention that.
I can't believe we didn't talk about that.
The amount of sweatiness, it must have been deliberate. They must have just been hosing people down with vegetable oil. Every shot, they're just perspiring to beat the band.
I can't believe we actually didn't talk about that in our little pre-interview.
Who plays his wife? Okay.
Ashley Judd.
In a minor role as the wife of Matthew McConaughey. Just glistening. I wanted to towel her off.
Anyway, so that is the plot, right? It is McConaughey as a small-town lawyer, and really the fallout that happens in his life. I would say the larger theme of this is about racial politics.
Right. When the racial fault line is unearthed in small-town America, what happens to the community? What happens to all the people whose lives are affected by it? Did you enjoy the movie A Time to Kill?
I texted you last night when I was watching it, honestly, and I was pretty close to turning it off within the first couple of minutes because
The rape scene
is really brutal, and
it's kind of impressionistic, but it's still, I don't even know if it needed to be in the film. Like, it's very like dark and upsetting, and I don't know, you could have just cut away and we would have understood what happened.
I think I agree with that, but I think that to get the full force of Carl Lee, he's the guy who is the father, to get the full force of his rage, you did have to feel this. And that scene does make you feel that way. I did really enjoy the movie. Like I was saying earlier, I did want to turn it off within the first 5 or 10 minutes and be like, I just cannot deal with this. But I thought that the movie was actually, one, really good, and two, it holds up incredibly well.
Yeah, it was good. I'd seen it, but I hadn't seen it in a long time. I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to. You started watching it way too late, though. Like, you texted me at like 10:30, like, watching the movie, oh boy. I was like, oh, this is a 3-hour movie. He is in for it.
Yeah, but you did like the film.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I thought the cast is incredible. It's a very old school movie, right? It's very like, like a solidly crafted. There's lots of set pieces and monologues, and the characters are, you know, everyone's deeply inhabiting their role. It's very old school in its sensibilities and its approach.
And it's based off of a John Grisham novel.
Yeah, the first John Grisham novel, I believe. And I think that I think this was his first big bestseller, maybe even his first novel.
Okay.
And I think that he is, the McConaughey character is this sort of this thinly veiled, like, how he imagines himself, this sort of crusading liberal,
yes,
you know, Southern lawyer guy.
I agree. And it's important to note that while on the surface this film could have very easily been a lot less than what it was, because you could easily make it the trope of white savior coming in to save the black man, but it's definitely not that simple. Like, it could have been a very clear-cut kind of movie, but a lot of this is about people trying to talk about race.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a white savior movie.
No.
But I do. It really centers the white characters, right? Like, this
totally
happened to... So Sam Jackson plays Carly Haley, and I think his character has a lot more agency than I remembered him having. Like, he's not just, like, the black man behind bars who has to be saved.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he exercises really a surprising amount of control over the events around him. But he's the only black character... There's lots of other black characters in the film, but he's the only one who we really get the perspective of. Like, there's a lot of other, like, I would say, well-drawn supporting characters, mostly white, though. We don't really understand his wife or, like, the sheriff. Charles Dutton is the sheriff. Like, we get a lot of him, but it's definitely a movie that centers the white characters' experiences.
Absolutely, and I think we see that a lot in films like this, especially...
From 1996, for
well,
sure.
Going back to Keanu Reeves' Hardball, it's supposed to be a film about a black community, but it's about a white guy in a black community.
Yeah, but much more egregiously so than A Time to Kill. So, we talked about Sam Jackson. Great role. Like, he's great in it. And the fact that he's, there's this... again, he could have very easily been, like, the victim. But he... There's a great couple scenes where they set it up early and they pay it off later, where the NAACP shows up and they see this as, a test case. It's important for them politically. They don't like the visuals of him being represented by a white attorney. So they've raised money. And they're trying to talk him into, like, accepting this kind of... this black litigation team. And, He wants to stick with Jake Brigance, the Matthew McConaughey character. And at first it kind of plays as a little bit like, well, he doesn't know these people, he doesn't trust them. At least he knows what Matthew McConaughey's all about. So that scene lands and it makes sense. But then later in the film, in kind of the big final speech he gives to Matthew McConaughey, it pays off even more, because he's saying, the reason I didn't want those NAACP lawyers is I'm a black man facing a white judge and a white prosecutor and a white jury. You're like them. You're one of the bad guys. You're going to get me off. Like, he's really thinking about his own survival.
Right.
And it's a great speech. It's a great moment in the movie.
It's a great moment in the movie. And this is a movie that I was surprised to find. It's filled with great moments for most of the actors, right? You have Kevin Spacey, who plays the district
villainous
attorney.
Oily, ooh, vile, loathsome.
You've got Donald Sutherland as Jake's
drunken mentor. So my favorite moment in the entire movie. So Donald Sutherland in a small role is Jake's mentor, and then Oliver Platt as his kind of buddy, this amoral defense attorney. There's the scene where they don't like each other, I guess, and they meet when Donald Sutherland comes in to help, and Oliver Platt says, "I thought you were dead," and Donald Sutherland says, "I'm trying." I rewound that 3 times. It's such a good moment.
That is not great impressions, but I appreciate your effort.
But the best supporting character, your fave.
Sandra Bullock.
Sandy B, as you call her.
Sandra Bullock plays a young law student who's brilliant, right? She's a hell of a lot smarter than him.
And well, I don't know about that.
She's a lot smarter than him. And she comes in and is, you know, charming and charismatic. And she's Sandra Bullock. Like,
she wants to work for free. She believes in what he's doing.
Yeah, she's fantastic. And she's got very compelling scene presence. And then there is also Ashley Judd, who plays his wife.
Yeah, although Sandra Bullock is, if you look at the marketing for this movie, she's like the top, she's the top picture on the poster.
Right.
She's not really a big, like, she doesn't play a huge role.
No, she doesn't play a huge role. And I this is my beef with the film, is one, I'm not sure how old these people are supposed to be, because Sandra Bullock is apparently supposed to be younger.
She does not look like a law student.
No, she's supposed to be younger than Matthew McConaughey. And they both pretty much look the same age. And they try to make her younger by giving her clothes that never stay on her body. Like, she's constantly wearing these shirts that are falling off of one shoulder.
She doesn't really dress like a law student. Although it's so hot. They're all sweating so much down
and
there.
It's so funny to me, because I'm like, are they just trying to imply that young people just can't fully get all their clothes on?
So I did like the, Sandra Bullock, and she has this kind of thing for him. He has a thing for her. They have this sexual chemistry, which I totally believe. Like, they are going to go at it in any second. And they set it up such that, like,
I don't know.
His wife's out of town, and, like, he's the hero we want. He's presented as not completely flawless, but, you know, he's Mr. Good Guy. He's clearly attracted to her. He has ample opportunity to act on that attraction. He chooses not to. But I think in a believable way, right? Like, we see that he is clearly tempted by her, and he's
right.
into her as much as she's into him.
Right. So they have this great dynamic in the film, which I really like. I think that this film, like a lot of movies, not even a lot of movies in the 90s, doesn't really do a lot of service to its female characters. Like, Ashley Judd, she doesn't have anything to do except play the harpy wife, right? Like, she's supportive in the beginning, and then she turns humorless. I mean, and very reasonably humorless, because people are trying to blow her house up.
Yeah, she's not, you know, kind of behind the hero here.
Yeah.
But her, like, I don't know that, and maybe they intended her to seem, like, shrewish or small, but
I don't know.
She's
if they
focused
did.
On, like she's got a kid in a house, and they're trying to blow the house up. She's
yeah.
understandably upset about that.
Yeah, I don't think that she is unsympathetic. It's just that there's always, like, you always have a character that's, like, the supportive wife or
yeah.
the unsupportive wife, and then you kind of have to get her out of the way so that the story can actually move forward.
They do that, but then, and they could have just left her at, like, they could have just shipped her off
right.
to wherever she goes.
They bring her
she
back.
Does come back, and I like that they brought her back for, like, towards the end, he's on his last nerve. He's
right.
like sleeping in his office with a pistol, and he hasn't slept in days, and he's sweating. She, like, drives through a rainstorm to come back in the evening before, like, I don't know, the closing arguments or whatever. And I like that they brought him back, because up till that point, you're like, if I was him, I would probably go with Sandra Bullock, because, like, they finally showed us why he is staying faithful to this, like, why he, not just, like, he's not staying faithful to her because he's a dutiful husband and father, he's also doing it because she has something, she offers him something, she gives him something, she makes him feel something.
Yeah, I think it's okay, except, again, there's a lot of stuff that happens to women in these films that is never really addressed. Like, it's dismissed totally in favor of the other story. Like, the 10-year-old getting raped, like, again, it's not her story, right?
Yeah,
this is the story of all the men around
and,
her.
Yeah, even the anger about that is her father's anger,
right,
not her anger or
her mother's
yeah.
anger. That's just, like, made totally irrelevant and
yeah,
invisible
for sure.
because the story just centers around men the whole time. And in one of the more jarring scenes in the film, Sandra Bullock is basically kidnapped and tied to a tree.
Yeah.
Like, she's almost lynched.
And you think something terrible is going to happen.
You think something terrible is going to happen to her, and she's very heroic about it, right? She's like, oh, well, they haven't broken
yeah,
anything
nothing
that can't
I
be
can't,
fixed.
Yeah, for sure.
So those are the flaws with the film. Like, does not do a huge service to the women.
Well, also, the whole time this trial's happening, his house gets blown up, his
yeah.
wife leaves him, his legal assistant gets beaten and kidnapped, his secretary's husband is murdered by... He's not sleeping, he's drinking every night, everybody is sweating. How does he even pull it together? Because he looks great in court. He's on point. He's a disaster.
All right. Well, this is a perfect segue into the McConaughey-ness of the film, which is why we're here. This is what we're here to talk about.
Yes. What does Matthew McConaughey's role, his presence in this movie, say or do?
Okay. So Jake Berganz, like Brian has pointed out, goes through the ringer in the film. He starts out as this kind of clean-cut, cocky lawyer who has a little bit of devil-may-care about him, which
is... Yeah, his legal practice is failing.
Failing.
But he doesn't really, you never feel like he's worried about that. He's just like, Mr.
No.
Cool.
And as a quick sidebar, I will say that his poverty is very different than the black poverty that we see at the start of the film, right? He's pretty laissez-faire about the fact that he can't pay his bills, whereas that black poverty is much more, like, in despair.
Which the Sam Jackson character is explicit about at the end of the film.
He said,
like, Matthew McConaughey's character, he's even saying, like, oh, I'm trying to save my own self here. And the movie, the script does a nice job of undercutting that because Carly Bailey says, like, right. You're not like me. You know, if this was you, you would be fine. You know, but like he makes that really explicit comparison between their lives and their circumstances.
So Jake goes through the ringer in this film, right? There's a lot of terrible things that happen to him. You went through the laundry list of them, but he still maintains some kind of idealism. And I think that that is essential to this Matthew McConaughey playing him in the role.
The sunny optimism at the heart of Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, it is. Like we talked about with Keanu, sometimes Keanu is best in roles where like the role is kind of a blank slate. And Matthew McConaughey to me is very good in these roles where even though terrible things happen, he still is optimistic.
Yeah, but I think he sells, like, this character has a real obvious arc, right? Like,
right.
A, all these terrible things happen to him, but also he makes some bad choices, right? Like, one of the plot points is that, like, Carly came to him and said, I'm going to kill these jerks, and he doesn't do anything about it. He doesn't really take them seriously. Yeah, he screws up a few times, and he's getting a little, like, desperate and stressed out towards the end of the movie, and he kind of rallies. And I think McConaughey sells all that. Like, you believe it's really happening.
And I think that's essential to him because he is, at his core, I think Matthew McConaughey is kind of that lovable screwball. Like, he is known for his screw-ups. Like, if you think about him in Dazed and Confused, right, which is the movie that he really starred in, or that kind of, he didn't star in it, but that kind of elevated him. He has that persona, which is this laid back.
All right.
Vibe. And he keeps that throughout this entire film. Like, yes, he's a lawyer, but he never can really lose that because it's like so essential to his McConaughey-ness.
Yeah, this is like the darkest possible version of a McConaughey character. But yeah, he doesn't kill himself or give up. He's like, let's try it again tomorrow.
Like there's a scene where his house literally burned down. Literally burns to the ground, and he's sitting there in the ruins and the wreckage, staring at this family photo and like calling out to his dog, and then his dog finally comes running up, you know, hasn't died. But that's very Matthew McConaughey-ness of it.
Yeah, even like the dog being a lot, because Oliver Platt shows up, he's like, that dog is dead, buddy. And then the dog's not dead. The dog escaped the fire set by the racist arsonists. Not super believable as a moment, but like, yeah, that's definitely like the movie itself is mirroring the McConaughey arc.
So one thing about Jake is that he's a relatively new attorney, right? He has just inherited this practice from his old mentor. He even admits several times throughout the film that he just does not know enough. He has not been practicing law that long. And other people come in, they offer to take the case off his hands. So you get the feeling that he's kind of dumb. And you need Matthew McConaughey for that, right? Like, you need somebody to be like, yeah, I believe that.
I feel like he's a little out of his depth, maybe. But not that he's dumb, right?
Okay.
The movie, like,
you're right.
Movie always has us believe that he's competent. He's stepping up to do this kind of case he's never done before, and he delivers in the end.
But that's why you need Matthew McConaughey, because you need that little bit of believability that, all right, he's winging it.
He's always winging it.
Exactly. And that is very essential to this character.
So I'd like to hear your take on the peak McConaughey moment of the film, but if I might be permitted a brief detour.
Okay.
There's an interesting moral conundrum here.
Yes.
The movie doesn't fully grapple with.
Okay.
So Carly Haley commits murder. Mm-hmm. Like, he kills these two racist Klansmen who violated his daughter. And one thing the movie does that's interesting is what would be the more obvious choice, and I would have respected less, would be to have them go to trial and be acquitted. And then we would have realized justice cannot be delivered for a black man in America, in, you know, the Deep South 25 years ago. He takes justice into his own hands. But that doesn't happen. They're not actually tried. They are on their way to be arraigned. He pops out and guns them down in cold blood. Along with Chris Cooper, who we didn't discuss. An excellent character actor and an excellent role. So he... And the move, the defense strategy hinges on whether or not he was insane at the time of the murder. We all know he wasn't. It was completely premeditated. All the characters know that, and as the viewer, we absolutely know that because we see that. So really, the movie's asking us to believe, but the movie doesn't grapple with that. It's asking us to trust that, like, he delivered justice, and a lot of the characters in the film also seem to believe that, but he didn't really. Like, he didn't actually give the justice system time to fail or succeed.
I think that's a really interesting point, and this is not a rebuttal, but I think that it's a foregone conclusion that the justice system was not going to prevail. So, and this is where I actually think that John Grisham really comes into play, because again, this is based off of his book, and he was a lawyer for a long time, and it really starts with the premise that the justice system is not going to work. That
right,
it
he
is
doesn't
actually,
think he's going to get justice.
It's yeah, and that's the premise that Grisham is actually writing under, and that's the foundation of the whole story, is that this system is actually corrupt because, like you said, we know that he's not insane. Everybody around him knows he's not insane. So it really is about manipulating the system to see if they can get it to work for them. This is not a movie about let's let the law play out. This is about who can manipulate the system
right.
better, because that is what the system is set up to do.
They don't trust the system.
No,
and
no
all
one...
the characters seem to believe they have no reason to trust the system. So you're right, it's not really a legal movie at all.
No.
Like, the whole legal strategy is a fig leaf that everyone acknowledges.
Exactly. It really is all these people who are in the courtroom playing a part. There's no like law and order-ness to this where they're
yeah.
like, dun-dun-dun-dun.
And Chris Cooper plays a deputy who is maybe not friends, but is, you know, has known Carly Haley a long time. Carly Haley accidentally shoots him in the knee, and he loses his leg. They put him on the stand because he's an innocent victim of Carly's crime.
Right.
And then he, at one point, says, so Carly, in, again, showing agency as this victim character, he insists that Matthew McConaughey ask him, you know, do you think he should go to jail? And Chris Cooper, in this great little bit of acting, you know, says, I don't hold it against him. He shouldn't go to jail. And then he shouts, you know, to the jury, turn him loose.
Right.
Which we're really, like you say, we're really well beyond the judicial system at that point. He's just shouting to turn this guy loose because, you know, he did what he also would have done as a father.
Yeah, and we're kind of off the topic of McConaughey right now, but I want to talk about it because it's so important in this film. Is
Although
that...
McConaughey is very out of his depth in that moment, again, to return
so,
to your...
so out of his depth. This is not a movie about... the system working as it is meant to. It is about people trying to manipulate the system in the best way that they can.
Right.
And that is one of the things that makes this film still so relevant right now.
Yeah, were this to happen right now, 25 years after the movie was made, it almost certainly could play out the same way. And the strategy that Carly insists Matthew McConaughey or Jake Burgantz adopt, this like forcing the jury to look at it from a white person's eyes, would probably be the smart way to defend him today.
I actually was very surprised when I watched it because I thought it was actually a very good racial critique. Carly Haley knows that he can't get a fair trial.
Yeah.
Matthew McConaughey knows that he can't get a fair trial, except he was trying to see if he could just manipulate the system enough that it would work in his favor this one time. And the only way he gets acquitted is because he has to force people to realize their institutionalized racism. Like, that is the climactic moment of all of this. That, to me, happened in 1996. It is very relevant in 2019.
Yeah, like, they're a little sweatier and redneckier than maybe the people
yeah.
in that community would be today. But, yeah, I don't think the racial politics have advanced all that far.
No, which is sad. Let's move on to other things. Let's talk about peak McConaughey in this film.
What is the peak McConaughey moment to you?
So I have two. I've got two.
Are you allowed to have two? What's the protocol here? You know what? Share your two, and then we'll decide which is the best one, because I don't have any.
You don't have any?
I'll come up with one. Let me hear your two first.
All right, so peak McConaughey for me in this film is actually in the scene with Sandra Bullock. They have just gone through a terrible day in court, and they're both sitting there. And they've been shot at again for like the eighth time in the film.
God, we haven't been shot at all day.
And they have this wonderful little scene where she's like, do you want me to stay?
And they're in her hotel room.
No.
Oh, no, they're in his office.
They're in his office. So this wonderful little scene where they're in his office and she
the
asks
sexual him, tension
stop
is ripe.
Interrupting me. I'm going
embellishing.
To murder you. They are in his office and she asks him, do you want me to stay? And he gives her this very, very long pause and he says, yes. And then there's just like long other pause and he just looks at her and then he says, which is why I think you should leave. And that is such a good McConaughey moment because he does a lot of acting with his face. Like I never understood that. I was like, wow, I think he might actually be a really good actor because he's got that vulnerability plus that like moral steadfastness all in that one scene.
So that's but is that a McConaughey moment? Like that film was like an actorly moment. Like that's a Jake Brigance moment and McConaughey is delivering this character in that moment.
Well, do you think that, like, are you talking about like a Dazed and Confused McConaughey moment?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, when he says, all right, all right, all right, clearly the most iconic of all McConaughey moments.
Right.
What was your other thought from this movie?
Well, my other one is actually something that I've seen him do in both in a couple of films, which is his patented let me move the hair out of your face, which is very McConaughey thing to do.
Understated, sexy, but non-threatening.
Yeah.
There's one thing that he does a lot in this movie, and I don't know if this is a McConaugheyism or not, but at multiple points, he is flabbergasted. Like, something happens and you get this like burr reaction shot where he's just like been like someone like someone clonked him on the eyes with a hammer. He's just completely like taken aback. There are several times in this film when it, because this dramatic things are genuinely happening to them at all times.
Yeah.
And then this wedding. But I think that moment, that look on his face when he's just like, holy crap, what happened? Like that happens a lot. And to me, that's kind of the defining thing he does in this film.
I agree with that. I think that's pretty good.
So, sexy hair moving, being flabbergasted, and but sort of a general smoldering.
He's like an earnest smolderer.
Yeah, he's not like smoldering exactly.
So next question: where do you think this movie ranks in the Matthew McConaughey canon?
That's a good question. I feel like this is a movie that I don't think we're going to watch this season that I happened to recently watch, The Lincoln Lawyer, which is him playing a Southern lawyer who, again, a very similar role. And like having just recently watched, but a much, much later film, having recently watched that, you can see he's a much stronger actor. It's not as good of a film. He's a much more subtle actor than he is in A Time to Kill. I think there's a lot of places where he's, you know, he's not over the top or ham-handed, but he's very, like, he's in hero mode a lot of the time. There are probably some subtler choices he could have made. But I think this is what a lot, like, unless you think of him as a rom-com dude, which I feel like a lot of people do, I feel like this is probably a pretty iconic role for him. Like, that's a serious, dramatic role, and maybe his first and biggest one.
This is definitely McConaughey is a star, right? Like, this is not a star-making vehicle for him. He's already a star when he gets this big role in this huge movie.
Yeah, the whole movie is centered on him.
Right, the whole movie is centered on him. And I think he does a great job of carrying
it, he does.
Honestly. But also, it's peak sweaty McConaughey. Like, in the Matthew McConaughey canon, this is by far his sweatiest role.
I can only assume that because of all of the sort of high-wattage stars, there was no towel budget on the production, and that's why all the stars were sweating buckets all the time.
I mean, they all look like they just ran a marathon. Like, this is not everyday sweat.
Maybe they actually shot it on location in, like, high summer in Mississippi.
Well, I'm sure they did.
Oh, and his tie is never tied. In so many scenes, he'll go a whole day without tying his tie. But why do you have your tie on? It's just always dangling around his neck.
It's a performative tie to show people that he is a lawyer.
Yeah, to show he's a lawyer, but he's not lawyering right now.
No. He has an off-duty look and, like, a lawyer
he really
look.
Does, yeah. He has his sweaty, rumpled lawyer vibe, and then he has his, like, good old boy Mississippi vibe. There is a great moment. I don't know if this is a Pete McConaughey moment, but I really enjoyed it. It's when he first is chatting with Sandra Bullock, and they've got a little witty repartee going back and forth. And she's talking about how her father's rich, and she goes to Ole Miss, and her father went down to Ole Miss himself and got himself a sweet-tempered little Ole Miss sorority girl. And Matthew McConaughey, who is literally chomping a cigar, says, "I married a little Ole Miss sorority girl myself." And she says, "Well, they have an excellent selection." And he says, "They do, they do." It's a great little bit.
They're both so good together that I'm like, why are you with Ashley Judd?
Yeah, I want to see the lawyer drama where the two of them like practice law in a small southern town.
And that's one of the many things in this film that does work is, which you brought up earlier, is this like very believable sexual tension. And this is good. Because we talked about Keanu not really having a lot of, like, sex appeal. Like, it's just not something
McConaughey
he has.
McConaughey is the opposite.
McConaughey has a ton of sex appeal.
We can barely contain it. It's just sweating out of him.
Like, he has chemistry with every single person. I was like, are him and Oliver Platt?
Oliver Platt, also very sweaty. The hair's hanging in his eyes.
Yeah. There's very much this like intensity to McConaughey that whoever is on screen with him, you're all immediately like, well, I guess they're gonna bone at some point.
Yeah, it's just barely restrained boning energy that's always about to erupt. Who's your vote for most valuable player in the movie A Time to Kill?
MVP of the film.
For me, it's Charles Dutton as the sheriff. So a smallish role, and you don't get a lot of backstory for this guy. He's a black sheriff in this like deeply segregated, deeply racist county, which I think is an interesting choice. And at first, I was like, "That's why would this place have a black sheriff?" But at one point, we understand that he was a professional football player, a college football player, so he's got this kind of fame that he's trading on. And he brings a lot of like gravity and like toughness to his role. He's got this. There's one scene where he just beats the tar out of one of these Klan guys who's about to blow up a house, and it's just really like completely inappropriate for a law enforcement officer to just like bust the ankle of a guy with his nightstick. But like he's constantly being pushed by these terrible people, and he has this personal reason to unleash that fury we see in one scene, but he usually doesn't. Like, he really, like, if you get at all the sense that there's any kind of law or justice to be maintained in this place, it's coming from that guy.
Yeah, he's really good because, like you said, he doesn't actually have a lot of lines. Like, all his lines are like, "You gotta come with me to the station."
Yeah, he's in a lot of scenes, but he isn't saying a lot.
Yeah, I think that's good. So, for me, the movie MVP would have to be Sandra Bullock.
I knew you were going to say that!
I tried to pick something less obvious.
You stan Sandy B. And I respect that about you.
I am a big Sandra Bullock stan. And again, she is so good.
She's good in this, yeah.
She's so good in this, but she also, like, the role is a little thankless, right? It is post-Speed, so you think that she would have a bigger part, but she doesn't. She's no Kiefer Sutherland who got to play like a KKK head or something like that. But she does a really, really good job of taking what little she has and running with it.
You know, we watched Speed last season. We talked about Keanu movies. And I was startled by how much I enjoyed her in that movie. Here, a much smaller role, but again, great in it. I feel like we should, I'm revisiting my mental map of Sandra Bullock as a performer.
She's fantastic.
And in Speed, she was this like real perky, adorable, sparky firecracker. And this one, it's a totally different vibe she's bringing to this character, who she could have played exactly the same way if she wanted to.
Yeah, but she's got this sass to her that I think works in her favor. And one other thing that she does in this film that you will not see people do anywhere in films these days: smokes like a chimney.
Yeah, they're both smoking cigarettes.
Yeah,
What if there is a spin-off drama where Sandra Bullock is the attorney and Charles Dutton is the sheriff, and they're solving crimes in deeply racist, sweaty Mississippi?
I would absolutely watch that.
I would too. What's the next film we're going to be tackling in this season of the podcast?
Well, the next film that we're going to be tackling is The Wedding Planner.
Oh, The Wedding Planner, a rom-com classic.
We're going to get into just a little bit to Matthew McConaughey's romantic comedy work.
Spoiler alert, it's extremely terrible.
It's actually incredible.
Really?
Oh, I love this film.
We're going to have to talk about that.
So please be sure to join us next week as we talk about Matthew McConaughey's star turn in The Wedding Planner.
And, you know, welcome to season 3 of the podcast, loyal listeners. Please get at us on Twitter or the social media platform of your choice. Are there some McConaughey films that you're into? Because, as we noticed when we sat down to look at his work, this dude has done a shitload of movies. A very wide range in terms of quality and content. So we're having some trouble deciding what we should tackle.
True. There is a lot to pick from. But just to give you an idea, some stuff that we're throwing around, we might be taking a look at Reign of Fire.
Got to do Reign of Fire. McConaughey fighting dragons.
We're going to hit the classics Dallas Buyers Club and Interstellar. So stay tuned for those as well. If you have a movie that you want us to take a look at, you can always leave it in the review section on iTunes.
Please give us a 5-star review on iTunes so that more people have access to this high-quality artisanal handcrafted audio content.
And you can find Brian on Twitter at Brian_Minter. And I am on Twitter at Hem Javeri.
Oh, and Hemel doesn't want to watch U-571, the Matthew McConaughey submarine movie, which, if anything, approaches the sweatiness of this film, U-571 definitely does. They are sweating up a storm in
that movie. I've actually seen U-571.
I have too, and they sweat so much in it.
All right, well, we're going to rank the Matthew McConaughey films by sweat. So stay tuned for that.